Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Dermatologist Dr. Lisa Jowellis joins us today to respond to your questions and comments. She comes to us from Dartmouth-Hitchcock Putnam Physicians at Southwestern Vermont Medical Center in Bennington. She's a Harvard graduate. She received a medical degree, as I say, from Harvard Medical School, completed a residency in dermatology at the University of Colorado in Denver. In addition, she holds a PhD in molecular pharmacology and toxicology from the University of Southern California. Wow. Dr. Ellis was a postdoctoral fellow and later an assistant research professor at UCLA School of Medicine in California. Dr. Ellis, thanks so much for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's terrific. She's got a terrific sense of humor also. To be part of today's conversation, give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We've got a couple of calls in. By the way, folks, if you want to get in, this is dermatology, you know. You can't find a dermatologist. The lines are out the door. Today is your day. You can be lucky or not. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, Lisa, first let me ask you, give us, if you would, a little tour, or as my aunt used to say, tour, through the various skin cancers, going from least malignant to most.
Yeah, we do see a lot of skin cancers in our clinic. There are three main types of skin cancers that we see almost every day: basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, and melanoma. Basal cell carcinoma is very common. It's commonly seen on sun-exposed areas. Squamous cell carcinoma is probably the second most common type of skin cancer, also seen most commonly in sun-exposed areas. Melanoma is the most deadly type of skin cancer.
That's the bad guy.
That's the bad guy. I was talking to Alan before the show. I saw about 16 patients this morning, and I...
And that's a light morning.
That was a light morning because I was coming to the show. We diagnosed about 10 new skin cancers this morning, including one potential melanoma and one potential cutaneous lymphoma. So those are the three most common types of skin cancers. We do see angiosarcomas. We see a type of skin cancer called Merkel cell carcinoma. We see metastatic breast, metastatic prostate cancer. So lots of skin cancers.
So when the lymphoma, does that present as a skin disease?
That's a very good question. There are two main types of lymphomas. There are cutaneous lymphomas, lymphomas that only occur in the skin, and there are also systemic lymphomas that can present later on in the skin. So I see a lot of primary cutaneous lymphomas, lymphomas that only occur in the skin, but I also see cutaneous manifestations of systemic lymphoma.
Okay, you ready?
Yes. Lisa?
Okay, we'll go to Jim in Matamoros. Okay, Jim, you got a question? Go ahead.
How do autoimmune diseases present dermatologically, and are there any new treatments other than corticosteroids and cyclosporins?
That's a great question. We see a lot of autoimmune diseases. The traditional autoimmune diseases that people talk about are lupus, dermatomyositis, scleroderma. These diseases are co-managed by dermatologists and rheumatologists. We do use a lot of steroids. We also use a lot of immunosuppressive agents like methotrexate, Imuran, Celcept. Cyclosporin is not very often used these days because of the toxicity associated with cyclosporin. I do use cyclosporin for short-term but not long-term use.
Jim, thanks for joining us. Okay, we'll go to Carlene in Saratoga Springs. All right. Carlene, your turn. Go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Ellis. I have on one finger under the cuticle, there's a little bit of blood coming out, and in that same area, there's a deep groove that's growing wider and wider. And I was wondering if that's indicative of anything, a serious health problem, or if one of my health problems is causing that.
There are quite a few reasons for bleeding under the nails. It could be totally benign, such as a benign vascular growth. Could be even trauma. It could be related to internal diseases, like some autoimmune disorders. And then, of course, you know, every time when I see a patient in the clinic, the first thing I think about is cancer. Cancer can present with bleeding. So if this is a issue that has been going on for a while, I certainly recommend that you talk to your provider and get to the bottom of this.
Well, now that raises a very interesting question, Carlene. I don't, hope you don't mind my just jumping in here, which is we know there aren't enough dermatologists. The demand is so high, it's increasing all the time. I guess you could go to a GP. That's about it, right?
Right. So most of my patients, if they have any concern about any lesion on their skin, they go to their primary care doctors, and if their primary care doctor knows right away, then that's great. You know, it's taken care of. If their primary care doctor is not sure, they'll refer the patients to me. And we have a great team in my office. They'll triage the patients. If the primary care doctor is concerned about a malignancy, a cancer, my staff will certainly get the patient to be seen ASAP.
How many partners are there?
I'm the only dermatologist in the whole hospital.
You must be well busy.
I'm very busy. We're booking into August now.
Oh my goodness!
And yeah. I see a lot of patients, and it's a very
Carlene,
busy
get
practice.
Yeah. Carlene, get yeah.
Can I finish my question?
Of course.
Okay, thank you. The blood is not under the fingernail. It's coming out on top of the fingernail from under the cuticle and into that groove. Does that make any difference to my original question?
It's still the same kind of differential diagnosis in my mind, yes.
Okay.
Carlene, thank you for calling.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
All right. Okay. Now, there's one person waiting, which means that if you want to get in, now is the time to do it. Oh, there's two now. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And I know that Joe will answer the phone. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to line three and Tim in Delmore. Okay. Tim, you're on.
Good afternoon. Doctor, what is shingles? Is there a way to prevent it or anticipate it? And is there a cure for it?
That's a great question. Shingles is reactivation of the chickenpox virus in your body. In the past, a lot of people would get chickenpox, and the chickenpox rash would go away, but the virus can stay
in
the nerves, and they live on. And later on in life, whether it's triggered by stress or illness, the virus can come out and present as shingles. And shingles is a rash that's usually on one side of your body. It's usually very painful, and the shingles rash will go away. But a lot of times, patients can have persistent pain or other symptoms at the area where they had shingles.
My aunt said it was the worst pain she had experienced since giving birth.
That's right. It can be very painful, and it can be very debilitating.
Yeah. So the question is, should we old people like me get the vaccine?
We do recommend vaccination in people older than 60. And the vaccination works great, but it does not mean that you will definitely for sure not get shingles.
Right.
I actually saw a patient last week. He was vaccinated with shingles vaccine, and he had shingles on his head. So it's not a foolproof kind of vaccine, but it definitely reduced the risk of shingles. And if you do have shingles, the severity of the post-herpetic pain is also less.
Okay, Tim, okay with you?
Oh, yeah. Is there a cure for it?
There's still no cure for shingles. We do put patients on antiviral medications as soon as we diagnose the patient with shingles, but there's no cure for the virus.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay. All right. And now we'll take a break and we'll come right back.
Support comes from the Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available. skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. Haydenville Woodworking and Design, a group of artisans designing and building renovations, additions, new homes, custom cabinets, and furniture for over 30 years. HaydenvilleWD.com for virtual portfolio. Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center, offering an entirely online MS in nutrition and the RN to BS in nursing program. Open house April 21st, Poughkeepsie. Adelphi.edu. Protex Gloves, helping to provide relief from chronic skin and hand conditions, including peripheral neuropathy, scleroderma, Raynaud's, and eczema, UVA and UVB sun protection, ProtexGloves.com. And from Proctors, presenting Deepak Chopra's The Future of Well-Being, based on mainstream and alternative medicine, Tuesday, May 3rd at 7:30 p.m. Proctors.org for tickets.
Thanks, Zach. He's brought us back to reality. We'll go to Jennifer in Kingston. All right, Jennifer, you're on the air.
Great. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Go.
I have a 13-year-old who was put on doxycycline last summer for acne. And then the dermatologist that we were seeing suddenly left the practice, so now we have no one. Her pediatrician went ahead and did a renewal of the prescription, but she kind of indicated she wasn't sure if it was safe to be on that the doxy for that prolonged period of time. Is that commonly done now for acne?
That's a great question. Which teenager doesn't have a little bit of acne, right? So, you know, we deal with teenager acne all the time. You know, I always tell my teenager patients, acne is formed by multiple factors. You know, usually we think of acne as four factors. One, your pores get clogged. Number two, you have increased sebum production or oil production in your skin. Number three, you have bacteria in your skin that can contribute to acne formation, specifically a type of bacteria called P. acne, and number four is inflammation. So because acne is formed by multiple factors.
So my question really has to do with the length of time that she would be the antibiotics.
That's exactly it.
Bacteria.
That's exactly it.
Okay, Jennifer. So, Jennifer, let her finish, and then if you want to cut in, go ahead. Okay.
So that's exactly it. So because acne is formed by multiple factors, I do use a combination regimen, which includes doxycycline in the regimen. But I also always put patients on topicals, whether it's topical benzoyl peroxide, topical antibiotics, topical retinoids. And then as the patients get better, I usually put patients on doxycycline for about 3 months. And my goal is always to either taper them off doxycycline or keep them at the lowest possible doxycycline dose, because nobody wants to be on a long-term antibiotic for a long time. Another thing is the resistance problem is becoming more of an issue in the medical world. More and more pathogens are resistant to antibiotics now, so we try to minimize the use of oral antibiotics.
Follow up, Jennifer. Jennifer.
Thank you so much. I think we'll have to follow up with that. We'll have to just drive 45 minutes to the next dermatologist that we can find.
Okay. Yeah, good luck
on that.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And now we'll go to Martha in Albany, speaking to us on line number 2. Go ahead, Martha.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're
can you hear me? I'm talking through the car.
Yes.
Yes.
We can hear you.
Through the steering wheel.
yes, absolutely. I have been treated for mycosis fungoides for over 15 years now. It's mainly on my breast, a little bit on my torso. How do I know, and do I need to worry about it being spread internally?
Interestingly, the lymphoma that I saw this morning was a likely case of mycosis fungoides. Mycosis fungoides patients do very well. Their lymphoma is usually limited to the skin, and rarely do they have internal lymphoma. You know, there are different stages of mycosis fungoides. You can have patch stage, plaque stage, or tumor stage.
Yeah.
So, you know, the patients that get internal problems, most of them have tumor stage mycosis fungoides. However, with that said, patients with mycosis fungoides are at an increased risk of developing other lymphoproliferative disorders. So you should definitely follow up with your doctor and do regular checkups.
What kind of other disorders do they lead to? Does it lead to?
You know, patients with mycosis fungoides can develop internal lymphomas.
Okay, thank you so
much. I will follow up.
Thanks a lot.
Thank
that
would
be great.
I have to say that if there is a, you know, every once in a while you hear something, and then you walk around and you say it all day long, and mycosis fungoides.
It's tough. You know, I grew up in China, and it certainly took me a long time to learn these terms.
That's great. Okay, we'll go to James. Okay, number 4 here. All right, James, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Perfectly.
Yes.
Great. So I just want to call the doctor because I have what was called a basal cell carcinoma, and my dermatologist said they can't do surgery on it and was recommending a medicine called Aravig, I think I'm saying
Eldera.
That correctly. And I just want to know what you think about that, because I have a friend in his late 50s who also used the medicine Aravig, and his cleared up just fine, and he said he didn't experience any side effects that I think may be said to come along with it. So have you used it? What would you say?
Jim, are you talking about Eldera cream or Aravig?
Aravig, I think it's a pill.
It's a pill. That's right. So Aravig was approved by FDA a few years ago. It's a great basal cell carcinoma medication. But the medication does come with side effects.
Like what?
Like, you know, one of my patients couldn't tolerate the medicine because of changing taste and muscle spasms. You know, everyone's basal cell carcinoma is different. You know, it's basal cell carcinoma have different size, different, you know, aggressiveness, different location. So the treatment can be very different. You can use a cream. You can do something called electrodesiccation curettage, which basically is scraping and burning the cancer cells. You can have surgery, Mohs surgery, or regular surgery. Okay. Or you can you can take Erivedge. So, you know, it depends on the type of skin cancer and what the skin cancer looks like under the microscope. So it's certainly a issue that you should discuss with your dermatologist. Maybe there's a different way of treating your basal cell carcinoma.
Do you have a dermatologist, James?
Yes, and said that surgery was not an option, as well as a topical treatment wouldn't work. So that's why he was recommending the Erivedge medicine and then just giving me the option to use that. And like I said, a friend of mine saw his just clear right up, and you know, he said he didn't experience any of the side effects, and I just wanted to, you know,
right,
see, you know, their potential side effects, but it's great that he didn't have any, so just
right,
hoping
right,
that would be the same case.
Right, James, right. Yeah, sorry.
So Jim, where is your basal cell carcinoma? Which?
Oh, there's one on my ear,
uh-huh,
and then one on the kind of cheek.
Okay. Are they very large skin cancers?
One's, I guess, decently large, and the other, they're just not sure how deep it is, and the surgery wouldn't. You know, they're just afraid to do surgery because it may be quite deep.
Okay. Yeah. We haven't talked about Mohs surgery, but Mohs surgery is a great type of surgical technique to remove skin cancers.
Right. Well, so the doctor, I've already gone through the Mohs, and that's
what they recommended.
He didn't feel good to do that surgery.
That's great. Great that you talked to a Mohs surgeon.
James, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
So do you do those surgeries, or do you refer them to other people?
I'm trained in Mohs surgery, but I currently don't do Mohs because we don't have the personnel to help me with tissue processing.
Interesting. Well, they should get them. okay, so let's see here. Elizabeth, we heard from, frequently gets allergy-related eczema on eyelids, ears, and scalp. Any recommendation for managing these? New products that are safe for these areas? I do not want to use steroids on my eyelids and have no way to apply to my scalp.
Nobody wants to use topical steroids because every time when we talk about topical steroids, they worry about systemic side effects or skin thinning from topical steroids. So and especially on the eyelids, it's so close to your eyes, you're always worry about the topical steroids causing cataracts or glaucoma. The first thing to do is you want to sort out what you're allergic to. There's a great type of testing called patch testing, where the dermatologist or even allergists can put patches on your back, and they put different chemicals or molecules on these patches, and they can determine whether you're allergic to any of the things that you're using. So if you can eliminate that particular thing that you're allergic to, that's great. You don't even have to worry about using medicine. But if you do have to use medicine, you know, around the eyes, I usually use topical calcineurin inhibitors like Protopic. It's a little more expensive, but it's certainly safer around the eyes.
And we have another email here from Mark, who says, good afternoon, doctor. I have a few friends who are African American, and they claim that their black skin serves them as a natural protector against the sun. Is this true that they don't have to worry about wearing sunblock or worry about skin cancer?
African Americans can have skin cancers. I've seen quite a few cases of melanomas. African American patients, a lot of their melanomas are found under the nails or on the hands or on the feet, not necessarily the most sun-exposed areas, but they do get melanomas.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then finally in this area, what is the treatment and prognosis for bullous pemphigoid?
Great. What's the
treatment and prognosis?
Yeah. So bullous pemphigoid is considered an autoimmune condition. It affects older people. Patients can present with these big, tense blisters. They're very itchy. And there are different treatments for this condition. You can use prednisone, but again, nobody wants to be on steroids for a long time. You can use immunosuppressive agents like methotrexate or Imiran or Celcept. And lately, I've been using doxycycline, interestingly, doxycycline and minocycline, plus something called niacinamide. And the combination have been successful in some patients. The prognosis is good. It's better than some other autoimmune diseases like pemphigus. So pemphigoid is different from pemphigus. Pemphigus has a little worse prognosis.
Okay, back to the phones. We'll go to Susan in Kingston. All right, Susan, you're on.
Hello there. How are you?
Well, we're good. Go. How are you?
I have a problem with the brittle fingernails, and I've had them all my life, and nothing I do works. I don't wear nail polish very often. And sometimes they feel like a little rough, and I have like maybe little ridges from the cuticle to the tip. And it drives me crazy because I've never been able to have nice fingernails.
Susan, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
I'm 63.
63, and how long have you been having?
All my life.
All your life. Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have any other skin problems like psoriasis, alopecia areata, things like that?
Well, now that I've gotten older, I've got a lot of dry skin,
mm-hmm.
and I have some dark spots on my cheeks.
Okay. So that's not related to your nail problems. So, nail fragility is very common. And the first thing I think about is whether you have any other dermatological or systemic diseases. The most well-known example is thyroid problems. So if you have thyroid problems, you can have nail problems. If you have psoriasis or eczema or alopecia, which is hair loss, you can have nail problems as well. And if your doctor can exclude all those possibilities, then unfortunately, it's just what we call idiopathic.
We don't know.
Idiopathic means we don't know. And maybe just, just genetic. In that case, people talk about taking biotin for brittle nails. I don't know if you have tried. Biotin is a vitamin that you can get in any vitamin stores. Some people take. I'm sorry?
It's not working, and I've been taking it since last March.
Okay. So you are taking. There's another vitamin called hair, skin, nail vitamin, and some people swear that it helps them. There are no randomized controlled trials to show that these vitamins definitely work. But there are some epidemiological studies, and there are some smaller studies that have shown that these vitamins can help.
Okay. Thank you, Susan. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Al.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right. Every once in a while, I'll read something in the health part of a newspaper or something that says that if you have your big toe has a deviation in it, or that it's a sign of an approaching heart attack. Have you heard of that?
I've never heard of that, and I don't know if I believe that.
No, I don't want to believe it. That's for sure.
That's right.
Let's go to Cindy in Syracuse. Cindy in Syracuse.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, you're on.
I have about 10 years ago now, what looked like a freckle on my shin, low shin, and it started getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger for about 6-7 years. And then it stopped a couple years ago getting any bigger, and it kind of sitting where it's been at all since then. And it's perfectly round, it's flat, it's a light brown, there's no weird color, no jagged edges to it or anything. And the size of it's about a little bigger than a pencil eraser would be. And so my question is it possible for freckles to just get large? Or maybe I've seen things like this be referred to as age spots too. And is it something that I mean, like I said, it's been there for a long time. And
okay,
if you do have skin cancer, how would you know the difference? Do you feel different or get sick from it?
Yeah, so freckles can get bigger. You know, it certainly could just be a freckle. But, you know, if you have a changing lesion or if you have a new lesion, I definitely recommend that you talk to your provider and see if it needs to be biopsied or not. But freckles can get bigger. So how do you know if it's a skin cancer or not? It's tough. You know, we talk about the ABCDE rule of melanoma, and that's only the rule of melanoma. We're not talking about basal cell or squamous cell carcinoma.
What is it?
So ABCD rule of melanoma. A is asymmetry. You know, if a mole is asymmetrical, you should, you know, think about talking to your doctor. B is border, irregular border. C is color, irregular color. D is diameter. So any mole that's larger than a pencil eraser, maybe, you know, ask your doctor about it. And E is evolution. Any mole that's changing, whether it's changing in color, shape, or texture, any mole that's changing, you should talk to your doctor. So your freckle certainly meets that criteria of changing lesion. You know, if you have any doubt about you know, whether it's benign or not, talk to your doctor, and maybe a really easy question for your doctor.
Dr. Ellis, the question, you came to E, and I didn't quite get what E was.
E is evolution.
Evolution, yeah. Meaning
any
your
mole
parents
that's changing.
Had it or whatever.
No. Mole that's changing.
Oh, any mole that's changing.
That's right, evolution. So any mole that's
okay,
changing.
Okay, we have to take off right now. We will be back in a moment. So thanks for Cindy. And now we'll be back in about 6-7 seconds, maybe 10.
Support comes from Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs, in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly passive and solar design elements, noble-home.net. Ellis Medicine, working to create a culture that helps nurses professionally and personally, ellisnurses.org for more information. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany, Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizer. Dine-in, takeout, delivery, 518-432-0358. And from the Urological Institute of Community Care Physicians, a team of 4 uro-oncologists with 75 years of combined experience, providing advanced robotic surgery for kidney, bladder, and prostate cancer, urologyoncology.com.
Well, we're here. Thank you, Zachary. Excellent choice in music, as always. We're here with Dr. Leisha Ellis, and she, as you can tell, is a pros pro. So let's go to Bill in Saratoga. All right, Bill, you're on.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Let's see. I'm about 67. About 18 months ago, I was diagnosed. I have nummular eczema, and they gave me some cream. I don't know. And that said, if I take CeraVe, since then I do have like these little dots, and if I put CeraVe on them, they go away. But now I have one that doesn't seem to go away. It's bigger than my nail, my thumb, the pinky nail. It's a little red. It's dry. That CeraVe does help it, so I don't. But it doesn't really completely disappear. So I'm wondering if you have. Can give me any insight on that. And the other question is there anything you can take for dry skin or for your nummular eczema? I mean, eczema as far as nutritionally, does that mean I'm not taking enough vitamins or minerals or something like that?
Right. So the you know, the first question is, you know, what is this spot that's not going away? You know, does the remaining spot, this spot that's not going away, does it feel the same as your regular nummular eczema lesions?
Yeah, it feels pretty.
Is it itchy?
Yeah, it feels pretty much the same.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and did you
it's
try?
It's dry and a little red.
Yeah, yeah. Did you try the cream that your doctor gave you?
Well, that expired. Like, I guess I could go put that on. I have no.
Yeah.
I still have some left, but I could put, maybe I'll try that then.
Right. You know, if the cream has just been expired, you know, I don't usually worry too much about it. You know, the JAMA article actually published a paper recently. A lot of the pills that we take are valid for years after the expiration date, and so are the creams and ointments. So you know, if it just expired, I certainly would try that cream. CeraVe is just a moisturizer. You know, sometimes it helps, and sometimes you need a little, you know, a little bit of a boost from these. I mean, most likely you were prescribed a cortisone medicine.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Okay, Bill
yeah.
from Saratoga, thank you. We're trying to get everybody in here.
Okay,
thanks again.
Thank you.
Right, bye. Okay, now we'll go to Lorraine in Windham. Okay, Lorraine, you're on.
Hello, doctor.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Okay, so I'm 68 years old, and I had Lyme disease last summer. I have mild psoriasis, which is under control with clobetasol for many, many years. But about 8 weeks ago, I got a case of hives. Mm-hmm. And I saw my regular doctor, had blood work, everything is fine. Saw an allergist. He said, don't even waste your money on getting allergy tested because it's probably not from food or medications, because I did try eliminating things from my diet and my regimen before I went to see him. Now, I still have it, and I'm wondering, is there any relation to the Lyme disease or the psoriasis, or could there be an underlying cancer? Because I know sometimes itching, but they are definitely hives, and they come and go, and I put my clobetasol on it, what I use for the psoriasis, which I also have under my fingernails and toenails, with the pitting and all that. So I just don't know what to do next, and I take Benadryl at night, but in the evening and the night, I'm itching and scratching, and it's a little perplexing.
Right. Hives or urticaria can be very difficult to treat. And of course, the first thing I do is I try to determine what is causing the patient's hives. You know, the first thing I think about is actually infections, especially in kids, but also in adults. Infections can cause urticaria. The other causes are medications. Some medications can cause hives as one of the possible side effects. The frustrating thing about medications is that you can be on a medication for years and years and years, and you were fine for years, and then all of a sudden you get, you know, hives from the medication, and it's a tough thing to determine which medication is causing the problem.
Right. Usually, well, I did go off all my meds except my high blood pressure pills.
Yeah.
So I did stop everything, you know, even the statin, you know, and they didn't go away after a week.
After a week. That's another. Oh. Yeah. So, you know, I see drug rashes in my clinic all the time. And, and you know, again, a patient can be on the drug for many, many years. And the frustrating thing is that you had to be off the medication for 3 months. And this is why it's frustrating, because you need to, you know, if you think it's your, you know, blood pressure medication, you need to be off that particular blood pressure medication for 3 months, up to 3 months, in order to determine if it's the culprit medication or not. So, yeah,
right.
it's frustrating. And you know, so medication is the second thing I think about after infection. You know, usually not allergies, and your allergists are right. Usually, it's not something that you eat, not something that you used on your skin, for example. You know, the allergy tests are usually not very helpful. And then, you know, unfortunately, there are some cases where we just can't determine what the cause is.
Can hives come from worrying?
Worrying?
Yeah,
worrying.
worrying can make your hives worse, but probably it would not cause
the,
hives.
Not in the first place.
That's okay. Right. That's good, right.
I am under a lot of stress, and I have to worry about that.
Stress can make everything worse.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Lisa, got to go. Thank you very much. Okay, let's go to Alan in Schenectady. All right, Alan, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I'm 44. Okay. 2 years back, I started developing what you would describe as spider vein on my nose, like on the bridge of my nose where my glasses sit. And it kind of just spread slowly over time. I've never been seen for it. I just wonder if there's, like, I watch this as you're getting old, right? Is there a treatment for this? It's pretty dense. You can totally just see it. It's this like red blotch.
Yeah. 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 So the most important thing is that you should protect yourself from the sun. Sun exposure can cause these dilated blood vessels, especially if somebody has rosacea. Rosacea is a chronic skin inflammatory disorder. So, you know, patients with rosacea tend to have more of these dilated blood vessels. Yes, there are treatments for dilated blood vessels on your skin. Laser works great. Laser, I don't do any cosmetic procedures. I'm a medical dermatologist, but if you talk to a cosmetic dermatologist, they can offer you various options, including lasers. And like I said, laser, a type of laser called pulse dye laser works great for dilated blood vessels.
Wow. That's
very good. I'll take it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you, Alan. Good name. You got a good name there. We'll go to Lois in Huntington. Lois, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm calling about an operation my husband's going to have. It's a small one on Monday. So this program was really well-timed. He has a seborrheic keratosis on his face, below his left eye, and kind of touching his nose, about the size of a pencil eraser. And he's had it now for about 2 or 3 years. I looked at pictures and things like that and pretty much thought that's what it was, because I teach biology. And I took a photograph of it and showed it to the general practitioner. My husband's not been to a doctor and doesn't need one for like 20 years. We're 72. And he's going to go to a surgeon to have it removed, because all of the dermatologists, as you well know, are booked up. And any that would perform an operation, it's like 9 or 10 months out. And he's really going to put on sunscreen and everything else all summer. So he'd like it done now. And a surgeon said they can do it just fine with cryogenic or something like that. Is it okay to have a general surgeon do it, or is it better to wait the long wait and have a dermatologist do it?
Let me ask you this. Any reason why he wants to get this lesion removed? Seborrheic keratosis is totally benign.
His glasses rest on it, and recently
so
it's been a little itchy, and it flaked off a little bit, so he got concerned.
Okay. So, if you are sure that it's a seborrheic keratosis, it's an inflamed seborrheic keratosis, you can, have a surgeon do it. It's very easy. You can either freeze the seborrheic keratosis. It takes a few seconds to freeze the lesion. Or you can numb the skin and shave it off.
He was concerned about the cryogenic. I think he read something. I told him to quit doing it. about it. And in the cryogenic, someone complained and said, "Oh, they had a blister and everything."
Can get a blister, and of course the blister will pop, and then it's going to heal. But it certainly is a possibility.
So, from the political scientist, I just want to know, Lois, how can you be sure of the diagnosis?
That's right.
If you haven't been to,
that's right. So that's why I said, if you're sure that it's a seborrheic keratosis, you can certainly freeze it. But I don't know if the surgeon is comfortable making the diagnosis
Surgeons are great at cutting, so but a lot of surgeons are very good. So you just have to determine if the surgeon is comfortable about the diagnosis or not.
He was worried also about treating a blister that might form under his eye. He didn't want any fluid to go in his eye. But I guess I thought it's like a blister on your finger. You know, once any liquid comes out, it kind of follows gravity and wouldn't go up into his eye. It would go down. And
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
On the other hand, my new initials are SDS, self-diagnosis stinks. And so you have to be careful. The internet is one of the worst things that ever happened to all of us.
Oh, no.
That's
yeah.
right.
Well,
you know,
I took it to the to our general practitioner. Right. And she looked at the picture that I took of it.
Yeah.
And it was, I had several different views, and she said that she was sure that that's what it was.
Okay.
But
she didn't say 90% sure, did she?
I don't.
Because there's always that 10%. Thank you.
I know.
Thank you, Lois.
I can't get him to go to somebody else, but I appreciate your advice. Thank you very much.
Bye,
no
Lois.
Problem.
Yeah. Okay.
Bye.
And let's go to Bill in Gloversville. I love Gloversville. Okay, Bill, you're on.
Doctor, I'm
Hi, Bill.
A 62-year-old Caucasian male with dry skin that has gotten worse over the years around the forehead and around the nose. And ever since I've been taking an amino acid supplement named L-lysine, it seems to have cleared up substantially. It's manufactured by Spring Valley. I picked it up at Walmart. It says it's for skin and tissue health, and I was wondering what you thought of it.
You know, dry skin can be caused by a number of reasons. You know, you can have dry skin because you have sun damage. You can have dry skin because you have eczema or seborrheic dermatitis, or even rosacea can give you dry skin. And certainly, lysine is not a medication that has a lot of side effects. So if it helps, I would say go for it. But just so you know, there are different reasons for dry skin.
Hey, Bill, thank you. Let's go to Bruce in Kingston, all the way up to number one. Bruce, you're on.
Yeah, I have a big toenail that reminds me of an armadillo. It's got
yeah.
so many layers.
Yep.
And it's not that just unsightly, but it can get very uncomfortable, especially in winter with a thick sock, like there's not enough room in the shoe.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering what the best thing, go to a podiatrist or what causes it?
Thick toenails, the first thing I think about is toenail fungus.
Toenail fungus is
very common, and
right, yeah.
So a lot of people with toenail fungus, their big toenails are affected,
sure.
And some of the other nails are not affected. So the first thing I think about is toenail fungus, and then trauma. You know, if you have always worn tight shoes, trauma from the shoes over the years can cause nail changes.
Well,
what do I do with the fungus?
That's right. It's an interesting issue because we heard from Stephen who says, are there over-the-counter toenail fungus treatments that actually work?
Right. So people try different things, different over-the-counter things. So there are different, medications that can treat a fungus on the feet. But those medications like clotrimazole, Lamisil, those medications don't work for toenail fungus. And some people try vinegar, some people try wicks, not very effective. FDA recently approved two new topical medications for toenail fungus, and, they're not great. Jublia is the one that, is on TV a lot, and there's only a 30% cure rate. Nothing works great, and, of course, nobody wants to take a pill, a lot of people don't want to take a pill for it.
Well, Bill from Kingston, thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much. We have one last call, and it's got to be handled within half a minute, okay? Doctor, it's from Marion Delmar, who wants to talk to you about hair loss. Real quickly, Marion.
Hi, doctor.
Hi.
Yes, I I have some general hair loss of an age and probably my family history, when I would expect my hair to really be thinning anyway, but this episode of it started with a reaction to some hair dye about a year and a half ago, and the rate of loss seems to be keeping up at a, you know, faster pace.
I'm sorry, Mary. Mary, we are out of time. Really quickly, Dr. Annie.
I am too.
Annie.
So hair loss.
Yes.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's you know, hair loss due to the irritation of the hair follicles from the dye, and a lot of times hair will grow back with time. But if you're concerned, you should definitely talk to your provider about
it. I'm so sorry, Mary. I wish we could have done better by you.
Well,
so sorry. We're out of time. Thank you, everybody who called in, and thank you, a very special thank you. She's a star, Dr. Alicia Ellis, for joining us today. Underwriting support for Vox Pop comes from Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, independent community hospital providing services to the community for 121 years, NLH.org. Thanks for joining us today on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Mackowitz. Ditto for him. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.